Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Monday, the start of a brand new week. Brand new week of kind of nutty craziness going on here. And as we get started here, a reminder that Matt is in the control room ready to answer the phone. So if you want to join us on the air and rant and rave and express your disgust at some of the stuff that is going along, the number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Getting the financial news out of the way, the stock market had a really wonderful day, which is surprising because last night when I went to bed, I was looking at the Nikkei and they were way, way, way down. But the U.S. stock market climbed, the Dow climbed 235 points, basically on just a couple of what normally would not be considered strong reports. Lowe's Home Improvement showed stronger retail sales. More and more people are doing their own fix-up to their houses and stuff. And so the numbers were a little bit higher than expected. They aren't anywhere near yet what would be considered normal trade, but it was considered an improvement over what the forecasters were saying. Bank of America's stock has been upgraded again, which would be significant if it wasn't for all this bailout money that's flowing through the financial establishment, which makes, and of course the recent change in accounting rules, which makes everybody look a lot better on paper. So the Dow is up. I don't know how much of that really translates to Main Street, to the real streets. Certainly the TV media is back to doing their cheerleading with the pom-poms and saying the economy's on a rebound, it's going on, you know, and they're just cheerleading it. Meanwhile, more and more industry experts are saying we really still have not seen the bottom of this thing. We're still going through this commercial real estate default crisis. All these vacancies you're seeing at the shopping malls, those are people who had mortgages on the buildings, rental in the units. If their units aren't being rented, the mortgages are defaulting. And it starts to look really, really kind of rocky. So, I mean, I would love for the economy to turn around. I'm not seeing it around me yet. You need to be the best judge, your own best judge, about whether the economy is really getting any better around you. And make your decisions based on that. Now, meanwhile, turning back to Swindler's List and the saga of Bernie Madoff with the loot, the criminal investigation into his deceptions, into his fraud, into his pyramid scheme, is beginning to expand to include many of his original investors who made a huge amount of money. And now it's coming out. They knew it was a pyramid scheme. They knew it was a crooked operation. Didn't mind, just here's my money, give me a piece of the action, and I want to cash in on this thing. So there may be some civil lawsuits there from the people later on who didn't know it was a pyramid scheme. They may go after some of these other so-called victims who knew it was a fraud, basically entered into a conspiracy with Bernie Madoff to commit fraud by giving them their money, and now the investigation is starting to catch up with them. Now, we've been hearing a lot of talk about revolt and about tax revolt, and it does seem to be spreading from state to state to state. We're out of money. We don't have any money to pay taxes with. You know, we're broke. We're busted out here. You know, we don't have any customers. You know, Americans don't have any money. The rest of the world thinks we're the 21st century version of the Nazis. They don't want to do business with us. Here in Hawaii, our tourism is way, way down because nobody wants to get fondled at the airports. Or they had the thing on TV, they were showing the new body scan that shows, you know, shows you naked to the TSA people. And I'm not shy, it's just I prefer to decide who gets to look at my naked body and who doesn't. And certainly not these fast food rejects with Butterfingers, you know, over at the TSA, who don't really stop much of the bombs getting through, the practice bombs from Department of Homeland Security. And of course, yes, I'm still holding a grudge, they smashed up my laptop. And I'm never going to let them forgive that. So anyway, the economy, at least here on the real world, the non-bailed out portion of society, we're still struggling, and more people are saying enough with the tax increases. We're hearing it everywhere that the government solution at all levels is to increase taxes. And, of course, a big fight, who should we raise taxes on? Ooh, raise it on them. No, raise it on these people over here. Oh, no, how about those people over there? They're not even listening to us. They won't even notice we're raising taxes on them. How about a carbon tax? How about an oxygen tax? How about an ice tax? How about a sunscreen tax? It taxes everything. And that whole thing. And people are fed up with it. They're really fed up with it. They don't care who's getting tax breaks anymore. or who's paying more tax. Everybody is paying too much tax for what we are getting. And I got a very irate email from somebody over the weekend reminding me that many countries actually have a higher aggregate tax rate than the United States. Here in the U.S., the taxation that you pay at all levels, all added up, including the hidden taxes and the excise and the fees and the tariffs and everything, it's about 50% of what you're making. And in other countries, yeah, the tax rate is like close to, you know, 60%. And so it is a little bit higher than here in the U.S. But in those countries, you get free health care, you get free college education. There are all kinds of programs and benefits that help the people get their businesses started. The roads are in great condition. The bridges are not collapsing. The problem here in the United States is we're paying half of everything we earn in taxes, and then we have to turn around and pay for our own medical care, which is the most expensive in the world, although not quite that high in quality. We have to pay for our own college education, usually go deeply into debt to do that if you want to go to one of the finer schools. Our roads are falling apart. Our bridges are collapsing. The whole place is shabby. It's turned into a shabby situation. And that's the difference. Because we're having to pay money we otherwise would not if we had a government that wasn't spending all of their money on bombs and bullets in Israel. Good example. Last week I commented on a report that came out of one of our local UH Manoa professors saying that every single Hawaii driver pays an average of $400 a year to fix their cars damaged by the poor roads that we have out here. And by the way, this is not unique to Hawaii, nor are we the worst. There are other states where the roads are causing even more damage to the cars that you have to pay. Now, a new report came out from another state agency saying the figure is actually higher. We here in Hawaii are paying $688 to repair damage on our cars that we would not have to deal with if the roads were in decent, good shape. So that $688 is, in effect, it's another tax that we're having to pay to make up for the fact that the state government spends the money on other things besides the roads and the infrastructure. And, you know, the money goes on all these social engineering programs and all these grand societal experiments. And, you know, I think when you've got a healthy economy, yes, there are some latitude for the government to go out and invest money in the future, either for the arts or for science. But some of these things just get downright silly, and a lot of them are just feather bedding and pork barreling. And it's just this grand old, you know, corrupted scheme. And by the way, that reminds me, we're paying attention to this huge scandal in Great Britain where the bankers and the MPs are pointing fingers at each other and trying to throw each other under the publicity bus. And now they're talking about a revolt in Great Britain against the established political parties, because this corruption over the expense account thing is just completely out of control. Which reminds me, we should be taking a closer look at the expense accounts of the U.S. Congress. There is no reason to assume that if the British politicians have been doing it to the British subjects, the American Congress have been doing it to you and I, we need to find that out. So, anyway, across the states, getting back to this tax revolt situation, we are seeing more and more voters basically saying, we can't pay any more. We are not voting for any new taxes. We are not going to vote or support for anybody who wants new taxes. We need to cut spending. And obviously, the best place to cut spending to get money back into the hands of the working class people and still keep our country going is to stop all of this war nonsense. Folks, we know that the entire Iraq war was a hoax. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. The sole justification for invading this country, which did not invade or attack us, was this idea that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were allied, and that was based on a confession extracted under torture. The war is a fraud. It is killing our kids. It is bankrupting the nation. If we stop paying for all of this nonsense, we'll have enough money to turn this country back into the wonderful nation it used to be. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia, Public Radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. As you just heard, during this last commercial break, we had another one of these commercials for these companies that does tax problem resolutions. They're all over. You see them everywhere. Print ads, email, banners, TV. It's a huge, huge, huge business trying to sort out all this tax mess. One of the reasons is the tax code is incredibly complicated. People are terrified of those forms. They don't know what any of them mean. I guess if you live your entire life in monastic isolation, dedicated to the god of the tax form, it somehow all makes sense. Actually, that's not true. Outside survey said that like about one-third of the information you get from the IRS's own phone lines is likely to be in error. And it is a huge mess. And the reason it is the tax code basically is an accumulation of decades of special favors given to wooden arrow makers or given to vaccine makers or given to whatever favored crony comes along, makes a donation to the congressman, the congressman wins and introduces a bill to basically hand a specialized tax break under the flimsiest excuses to the campaign donor. And that's why the tax code is so complicated. If we had a fair and just tax code, it would fit in a pamphlet. There wouldn't be a need for all these other special little exemptions and credits and all the rest of it. And, you know, a lot of people think the main reason for the tax code to be as complicated as it is to obscure the fact there might not actually be a law passed by Congress, signed by the president, and ruled constitutional by the Supreme Court that says there is a tax on wages and salaries. A direct non-apportioned tax on wages and salaries. It might just be a huge money-making hoax for the Federal Reserve. And, hey, they lied to us about Saddam's nuclear bombs, so why should we take their word on anything else? But getting back to the situation, it is a mess. According to these companies that are out there doing the advertising, I mean, they're not paying for all this advertising out, you know, just to see themselves on TV. There are easier ways to do that. They could go on American Idol if they wanted to and juggle books. Okay. But the situation here is that a large percentage of American households are in trouble to some degree or other with the Internal Revenue Service. Last year, the statistics were 20%, one out of every five households. This year, I can't confirm it. I am hearing that the noncompliance problem got a lot worse, especially for entrepreneurs and middle-class people who basically were dealing with the choice of making their mortgage payment that was going up and paying their quarterly tax payments. And a lot of people actually got burned in that whole real estate froth up because they were, you know, investing all their money in real estate and figuring they'd catch up on the quarterly payments, you know, after the fact, and then the market tanked and so forth and so on. So the reason I'm leading into this, of course, is getting back to Barack Obama. And he's out there talking about this honorary degree that he was rejected for. And he starts, you know, cracking a joke about sicking the Internal Revenue Service on Arizona State University. And everybody's, ha, 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 ha. And with one out of every five, at least, households in trouble with the IRS, this is the sort of joke that's going to backfire on Obama. Because if you're in one of those households and you hear him joking like that, you know, that is going to basically punch the button, all the anger, all the resentment, you know, that you have about the whole tax situation to begin with. And it's just one more indicator that Barack Obama is clueless about what we American people are dealing with out here in the real world. In fact, this borders on let them eat cake in terms of its sheer callousness and disregard for what ordinary people are feeling out here. So It really was tasteless, and I don't know if somebody wrote that joke for him because he was using his teleprompters at the time, and you can always tell, okay, they frame Obama so that you don't see the teleprompters, but he's always doing it because he looks like he's at Wimbledon, and you'll see them. Look down, look to the left, look down, look to the right, look down, look to the left, look down, look to the right, and on. That, and he's doing the teleprompter thing here. If one of his White House speechwriters wrote that joke into the speech, got to lose him right now. You need a speechwriter in there who actually knows what life is like on the main streets of America right now so that you don't get these callous gaffes. Now, speaking of Barack Obama, of course, this morning he came out from his meeting with Netanyahu. They're replaying the tape over and over and over again. You're going to get a lot of chance to see it. When you do, do this little experiment. Turn the sound all the way off. Don't listen to the words. Watch Barack Obama's face, and that will tell you what went on in that meeting, because he's sitting there looking like a whipped puppy. He's trying to put a brave face on it. He didn't get anything he thought he was going to get. He's just had a very hard lesson in real politic at the hands of Netanyahu. And Barack Obama thought he was going to get some concessions so that he could look good. And almost immediately after they reported this, then all of a sudden the corporate media started cranking up Barack Obama's position on the abortion issue. In other words, basically, Israel's going to get whatever Israel wants. The U.S. is getting no concessions whatsoever. And rather than allow the president to look like he basically got his clock cleaned yet again, they're shifting the focus. Now it's on to abortion. And we're back on Nancy Pelosi, and they're still flogging that whole issue. So when you see the replay, turn down the volume, look at Barack Obama's face, read his facial expression. It's going to tell you everything you need to know about what happened. Now, you and I both know that when they're in that meeting, neither Barack Obama or Benjamin Netanyahu are talking about Iran's nuclear weapons. They both know there are no nuclear weapons. They both know Israel is a nuclear power. So all they're really talking about is Benjamin Netanyahu saying, look, you have to start the war with Iran or we're going to start it for you. And it's going to look better for you if you start it rather than we. And the reality is, and this is probably what Netanyahu told Obama, which is why he walked out of the meeting looking the way he did, the situation is totally under the control of Israel. Because Israel can go in and bomb Iran anytime they want to. When Iran counterattacks, what road do they have to follow? They have to come right through Iraq to get at Israel for a counterattack. And that means going right through the U.S. forces. That drags the United States into this war against Iran, regardless of whether Obama wants to do it or not. So he just got his marching orders. He just got told there's going to be a war in Iran. It doesn't matter what you or any other American feel about it. It is decided. All they're looking for is a starting time. And what can they do to sell this one to a war-weary United States that already knows the war in Iraq was based on a complete hoax? The war in Afghanistan was based on a complete hoax. The whole thing, 9/11, the official report, the war in Iraq, it's all based on confessions extracted under torture. We know it is all a lie. I got to tell you, the thing I'd like to know, where are the families of the Iraq soldiers, the young men and women in the American uniform who've been killed and crippled? And as they have to realize now, it's all a hoax. It was based on a confession extracted under torture. It was based on forged documents. It was based on outright complete lies and propaganda. Aren't they angry? Don't they care about just how they lost their young people? Anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I'm looking into the chat room during the breaks here, responding to various comments. No, I'm not going to do a nude webcam to build my audience. We want the people to come to the show, not run screaming into the hills there. You're going to have to just deal with the T-shirt I'm wearing. Now, on a more serious note, getting back to the subject of taxes real quick before we move on, and the chat room, of course, is talking about the extraordinarily high taxes on cigarettes. Now, I don't smoke, so I was actually unaware of just how steep the price of the tax on cigarettes has gone. It's something like in New York, it's $4.25 a pack on a $1 pack of cigarettes, which is just absolutely unreal. Now I'm beginning to understand why the cigarettes are locked up in these secure cases at the market and everything like that. And the reason I wanted to bring this up, this is another classic case of government not taking the solution that works best for the people, but instead taking a crisis and turning it into an opportunity to create more tax revenue. And here's a classic case, because supposedly this very high tax on each pack of cigarettes is supposed to reimburse the government for the cost of treating people who come down with cancer from cigarettes. And the reality is, and incredible irony, it turns out the cigarette companies were sort of kind of technically right when they said tobacco does not cause cancer. And they're actually accurate there, because what causes the cancer is the fertilizer used on the tobacco plants. They use a very inexpensive mineral-based fertilizer, which has a high amount of polonium in there. Now, polonium is a radioactive material. It's an alpha emitter, which means it's stopped by the dead skin cells on your fingers. It's stopped by the paper wrapped around the cigarette. It is about the same radioactivity as the radioactive isotope used in a compact fluorescent light bulb. But when you smoke the cigarette and the polonium is in the smoke and gets inhaled into your lungs, then it is in a position to start sending out these alpha particles, and there's no protection. There's no dead skin cells. There's no paper. There's nothing to prevent them from basically just continually irradiating your body from inside, and you build up a body burden over time because your body can't flush this stuff out. So if the government was really, really interested in reducing the health hazards from cigarettes, they would simply tell the cigarette companies, you are banned from using any fertilizer with a radioactive isotope in it. And then the cigarettes wouldn't cause anywhere near the health problems, and then they wouldn't need to tax the pack of cigarettes, $4.25 for a $1 pack of cigarettes. But of course, if the goal is to find an excuse to extract more money from people, especially people addicted to cigarettes, and they are as addictive, more addictive than heroin, as a matter of fact, then of course you allow the cigarette companies to continue using these mineral-based fertilizers, and the cancer industry is happy because they're making tons of money selling their treatments and cures, and you can justify a huge tax on the pack of cigarettes. And this is the way our country works. Nobody's really looking for solutions. Nobody's looking for cures. They're looking for treatments and programs that justify the extraction and spending of vast sums of money from the people. And you will see this repeated time and time and time and time again. All right, put that away. Put the taxes away. Interestingly enough, now that we're all sort of buddy-buddy with the Russians again, at least for the moment, although very clearly the Pentagon is trying to kick off a new Cold War with the Russians, they miss those glory days of the 1950s and 1960s, where all they had to do was say, Russians, and we would throw our money and our children at them and not even dare to question what we were being told about the red menace out there. But we're sort of friends with the Russians now, and apparently the Russians have provided some documentation regarding the 1980 October surprise case. And what this is, for those of you not old enough to remember, this is back when Jimmy Carter was president of the United States, and there was this hostage taking when the Shah of Iran fell and Ayatollah Khomeini came in, and they didn't like Americans for some strange reason, although now we know why that mechanism is going to happen. But they took a bunch of hostages at the American embassy. There was an aborted rescue effort. There were rumors that was intentionally sabotaged to prevent Jimmy Carter from getting the hostages back in time for the reelection. He was running against Reagan. And so the story of the October surprise was that George Bush Sr. and some other of the Bush campaign people covertly conducted secret negotiations with Iran's then fundamentalist government, the Ayatollah Khomeini. This is actually illegal because they weren't the U.S. government yet. And we had a declared state of hostilities with them. So they were basically trading with the enemy. But they made a deal saying, hang on to the hostages until after the election, and then we will make all kinds of deals for you to get weapons and other stuff that you need. And sure enough, as soon as Ronald Reagan won that election, I'm sorry, I was responding to somebody from the tech tech booth. As soon as Reagan won, those hostages were released, and everybody said, "What the heck is going on?" And so the story about this secret negotiation to undermine, because Carter was going to get them released, he had a deal going with the Iranian government to release them. That's why they called it the October surprise, because Carter was going to bring the hostages home in October and just be set to win re-election in November. And this deal by Bush and company derailed that plan. And the subsequent weapons trafficking to Iran became part of that whole Iran-Contra scandal that was there. So this documentation coming out of Russia now confirms that that deal actually did take place, that Reagan's campaign did make this deal with the Iranian government to keep the hostages until after the election so that Reagan could win. Okay, we've got a caller on the line. I don't have a name or where they're coming from. And can we go to, I know it's an international call. Hello?
Hello, Mike. Brother Mike Rivero, this is Solomon calling you from Brazil again.
Oh, I remember you. Yes, yes. What is on your mind today?
I follow your advice. I just dialed the direct line, and I think it's easier.
Yes.
And I'm calling you because I would really like to contribute something to your distinguished show, to the distinguished program, if you allow me.
Yeah, please continue.
Thank you very much. You know what? I have heard many times that people accuse you of being an anti-Semite.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well, without being a rabbi, I don't want to preach anyone. I don't want to sound like a rabbi. But I would really like to contribute something to make things clearer to people. Okay, I will quote the book of David Gross that is called 1400 Questions and Answers About Judaism. Okay, and in chapter number 9 that talks about Jewish history and the question number 515 said, why are Jews include among the Semitic people, which also takes in the Arabs?
Yes.
And the answer is, the biblical account tells of Shem, Ham,
yes,
and Japheth, sons of Noah, the
yes,
descendants of Shem, or the Semites, are believed
yes,
to have settled in and inhabit the fertile lands stretching from the Euphrates to the Nile. So
yes,
you're not an anti-Semite. Because everybody who talks then against the Arabs is also an anti-Semite.
Well, that's absolutely correct. If you go from the Bible, the reason that Jews and the Arabs split was because of Abraham and his two children by two different women. And that was the split between Jews and Arabs. And then the Arabs later on split after Muhammad into Sunni and Shiite. So and then we had Jesus come along and further confuse things here. But as far as my own family history is concerned, I am actually Sephardic by descent on my father's side. The family that became the Riveros started in Judea. In 70 AD, they left because the Romans were being jerks and moved to Spain. And we became, you know, noble, and then we got caught by the Inquisition and forcibly converted to Catholicism. Okay, Solomon, we got to let you go. Thank you very much for the phone call and call. And again, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in God's wiser tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Last segment. One of the stories that came through today, as you know, we have in the past talked about many literary hoaxes that have been exposed. It seems that time and technology will catch up with a great many frauds, and certainly that is becoming true of much of the orthodox account of the history of World War II. But something a little more recent, and I got it, but I'm a little disappointed that this happened, because I loved the book and I loved the miniseries, and I thought it was really great, and it was really, in a way, it was valuable for helping the white people really comprehend where the blacks had come from. And of course, I'm talking about Alex Haley's book Roots, which became one of the most viewed miniseries. I think it was the most viewed miniseries in American television history. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful show. And it gave a lot of black people a stronger sense of where they came from. Now, unfortunately, we're finding out that the first part of the book, the history prior to the Civil War, Alex Haley just made it up. Apparently going through his papers and records at the University of Tennessee, they have found documentary evidence that Haley just made up Kunta Kinte and that whole portion of the story. It was just literary artistic license, even though Haley presented it as factual truth. And it is a little disappointing, but you know, we've got to have truth above all. We've got to know. And that's not saying that, you know, it's a very well-spun tale. But obviously, I think it needs to be relabeled as a fiction with some elements based on reality, as so many are. So it's a little disappointing. But again, this show is about finding the truth and getting the truth out there. And sometimes, you know, you have to go after some very cherished icons. And this is one of those times. Now, moving right along, Seymour Hersh has just really broken so many of the important stories recently, including the torture of children, the fact that the confession on which the Iraq War was justified was extracted under torture. Now we're getting another one from him where Seymour Hersh is reporting that the assassination team that killed Benazir Bhutto was a U.S. operation and was running on the orders of Dick Cheney. Now we know it wasn't that long ago where it was confirmed that Dick Cheney did have his own little private death squad running around the world killing people. And Benazir Bhutto was apparently a target. There are a couple of there's a couple of reasons being suggested as a possible motive. One being that the goal was simply to keep that part of the world in a permanent state of chaos, which makes it easier for the United States to justify going in and exerting their control. And, you know, basically kicking up a little bit of a war there to prevent Russia from logistically supporting Iran following an eventual attack there. But apparently this squad, according to Seymour Hersh, this squad was headed by General Stanley McChrystal, who is now the commander of the U.S. Army in Afghanistan. And it's just starting to come out. This is another instance of where the U.S. government is behaving in a manner that we normally ascribe to dictatorships. Remember how George Bush used to joke about this would be a lot easier if it was a dictatorship? Well, we're there. We've got torture. We have assassination squads running around disappearing people. We're carrying out assassinations of foreign heads of state. It's just absolutely amazing what's been going on out there. So, you know, Seymour is just continuing to report these things here. Now, here's another story. This is we're talking about taxes and benefits and so forth. Students from 19 states across the United States have filed a class action lawsuit seeking hundreds of millions of dollars from California officials for charging them significantly more for tuition than illegal aliens pay to attend the California colleges. The 42 plaintiffs say California state lawmakers and the University of California Board of Regents knowingly violated a federal law enacted in 1996 that says that any state that offers discounted in-state tuition to its illegal aliens must provide the same lower rates to all U.S. citizens. So, folks, let me back up here and tell you what they're really talking about here. If you are attending a state college in California and you are a U.S. citizen, you were born here, you were naturalized, you've done the paperwork, you are a legal citizen of the United States of America, you will pay more for your education than the illegal aliens attending that same school. You are paying taxes into the system that supports the California state colleges, and yet you are charged more to attend that college than the illegal aliens who aren't paying into the tax system and don't legally have a right to be there. Now, somebody want to tell me why the system is this screwed up and biased against the people who work? I had somebody send in an email in response to this saying, don't you think it's very funny that in order to work in this country, you have to take random drug tests? And yet, the people who are cashing welfare checks, nobody ever drug tests them to see if they're walking around stoned out of their minds. And I'm not implying that any one group is doing drugs any more than one other group, but I agree. This is a terrible double standard. If you're going to make the people who are out there working and paying the taxes do random drug tests, you should be doing it to the people who are living off the system. And now to find out this situation about the California colleges, and it's a sore spot for me, because I actually lost out on a scholarship at one point in my college career, because I wasn't one of the correct minorities. I didn't identify myself as Hispanic, because the name Rivero actually it's not from Mexico. And so I actually lost the scholarship to somebody who was in one of the targeted benefited minorities. You know, they're underprivileged, or whatever the catchphrase was for it. So they got the scholarship and I didn't. I almost lost a job one time. Same situation. They needed a minority hire to fill the quota system, and I barely just kept my job at that time. And I was doing a good job. And my supervisor said, it's got nothing to do with your quality of work. We need to prove that we have, you know, one from column A and three from column B and so forth and so on. It's completely out of control. It doesn't make any sense. It's certainly not beneficial to the society. It is pandering to key voting blocks. And I thought we'd kind of left behind that reverse discrimination thing back in the 1990s. Maybe because I'm here in Hawaii and we're all minorities, we don't see it as much out here. But this situation about the state colleges in California, which is where I went to college. I went to Cal State Fullerton. My wife went to Cal State Dominguez Hills. And the idea now that those of us who are legal citizens working, paying taxes, have to pay more to attend those schools than the illegal aliens who attend them. There's a problem there. There is a real, real problem there. And that's got to be dealt with. Final story before we run out of time here. Apparently there is a new press from prosecutors to block DNA tests for inmates convicted of various crimes, mostly of a sexual nature. And what it is, when DNA testing first came along and we began to see that a lot of people in prison for the crime of rape were actually innocent, and all of a sudden it's making the prosecutors look bad, it's making the justice system look bad, it's basically making it obvious to the American people there are a lot of wrongly convicted people in those prisons, in that very high prison population. And so you would think in a normal moral society, let's give them all DNA tests. Let's find out. Let's get this issue dealt with. Now, instead, we are seeing law enforcement authorities are lobbying to block any more DNA tests. They'd rather keep innocent people in prison than be embarrassed. And that's really the state of the union today. This is why I do not support the death penalty. We know the court system, it's all about keeping score of the convictions. It's not about justice and fairness. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time, here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, stay safe, be well, drive carefully, hug your loved ones, and aloha, America.